We're glad you're joining us here at NRCC Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts.
You might have seen a New York Times opinion piece floating around. The guy who wrote it was actually an advocate for religion, but he was noting the decline, especially among young people, of those who find a thriving spiritual journey inside the church. And he noted that as we are doing these surveys, the recent alignment of Christianity and politics has really just accelerated the trend, so it's actually going faster than it even was going when it was going fast. And it raises the question, when we see these numbers, is this the end of organized religion? Is this the end of organized Christianity? Which sounds crazy until you think about the numbers and the pressures that are involved. Right now, people between the ages of 20 and 40 who live in our nation, out of those people, 2 of every 10 can find a vibrant spiritual journey inside the Christian church. 2 out of every 10. So fast forward 20 years, and you imagine what happens when they have children, and their children are finding a way into or not into the church. It isn't a crazy notion to consider that this might be the last large generation that would find themselves in organized religion or organized Christianity. So I've been thinking about these thoughts for some time, and in particular have been thinking how that bears on our community. Where do we fit in this larger context of a religious revolution that is going on right now, this cultural upheaval that is going on right now? And so I planned to talk these ideas over that I'm going to say today with the board and with the staff, but Julie suggested that it would be valuable to do this as a whole congregation. So this week, I want to give you some context. Not surprising. I'm going to give you some context this week, and then next week, we're going to think about some applications, some decisions that we will need to make together. So to begin the context this week, I'm going to, as I often do, start with history. And in this case, it's going to be our history as a community, our history as a congregation. And our history kind of starts with me, because I started our community. So in 1990, I was beginning my second year as a minister at a mega church in Los Angeles. And at that point, it became very obvious to me that our church emperor, our religion emperor, had no clothes. Because for me, religion had been a powerfully transformative, life-altering context. So it was a jolt when, in that job, I was the college minister in that context, these young people were not having the same kind of experience that was as transformative as it had been for me. So 1990 was the beginning of my second year as a minister at that church. The first year had been a rocking success. The group had grown exponentially. We had done all the good things that a big college group should do. We'd had big events. We had gathered for big meetings. We had big music. We had big trips. We went on missions trips and did service. And I was being roundly congratulated by all the leadership of this megachurch. Great job, Doug. Exactly what we hoped for, Doug. Right person for the job, Doug. Keep up the good work, Doug. And all those voices were unanimous, except one. And that one was this quiet interior voice inside of me. Because that voice kept nagging me, saying, this isn't right. This isn't even good. What we are not doing here is what religion is designed for. This is not a transformational experience that is going to change our lives and radically transform our world. That was my first year, and my second year was very different from the first. I spent most of the second year quiet and alone in my office. I showed up for all the meetings that I had to show up for, but we didn't do the big events, we didn't do the big meetings, we didn't do the big music, we didn't take the big trips. I got quiet. And college kids, being where they are in the life cycle journey, they begin to quietly drift away when I got quiet. Of course, I was inviting them to, let's fast and pray and find out what's going wrong. I was inviting them to, we got to dig into this thing and find, they wanted to find somebody nice to date. So by the end of the second year, we were no longer a big group, and I was no longer being roundly congratulated. It was a year in which I did a lot of wandering. I did a lot of questioning. What's wrong? What went wrong? Where did we go wrong? What is church? Well, the megachurch, they loved me, and I loved them, and so I got to stay for a long time, but eventually they had enough of this, and they said, I think, Doug, it would be great for you if you were a minister somewhere else. So that brought us here to Raleigh, and I did not come so much to start a church. We did start a church, but I really came to start a laboratory, a place where we could figure out what is church, what is religion, what does it mean to be Christian? And it started with a really tough question. And that tough question was something that I was observing and reading about. And the question was, why do Christians behave so badly? Because that's the opposite of what religion is supposed to do. It's supposed to make us behave better. And we are finding ourselves behaving more badly. There was a business guy in the church back then, and he was complaining to me, and he said, I hate working with Christian clients because they're never satisfied. They always complain. They never pay on time. They always try to chisel me. They never fulfill their obligations in this thing. But, he said, my gay clients, on the other hand, they are kind, and they compliment us on our work, and they pay us what we agreed on before the job, and they bring snacks, and they come out, and they say, here's a drink. And what I was reading was that there was a bunch of demographic studies going on at the time that was confirming his experience. Why are we behaving so badly? So it was a thread that I began to pull on, asking why. Christians are no worse than other people. But why are we behaving worse? Why isn't our religion doing what religion is designed to do? Now, you can read about a lot of this in the first book that I wrote. It's out in the lobby. But what we came to understand was that our behaviors are bad because our instincts are betraying us. What's happening is we've got a set of instincts that are telling us to zig when really we should be zagging. But why? Why do our instincts betray us? Well, it turns out that human beings are meaning-making beings, and we make our meaning through stories. We tell ourselves stories about the way the world is. We tell ourselves the stories about the way we are, about the way things are, about the way God is, about the way the universe is. We tell ourselves these stories. And then these stories have this capacity to frame our behaviors so that we are either inspired to move that way or we are uninspired and we move this way. It turns out that stories are powerful in informing the instincts that we bring that then cause our behaviors. And one of religion's most important jobs is to frame a story for us to find ourselves in, a story that inspires us to seek out a deeper reality and to have a deeper experience of that deeper reality. And our story wasn't, and for many, many cases, our story isn't. It's not inspiring us to an elevated way of living. We have lost our way. When we weren't looking, some very understandable historical forces got in and corrupted our story. Somehow along the way, our God became mean-spirited and hypocritical. And we become like the God we worship, and we have become mean-spirited and hypocritical. Somehow along the way, for understandable historical reasons, our practices became meaningless and droning, and many of us feel like we have lost our meaning, and we tend to drone on. So again, not a church, but a laboratory to try and figure out church, which brings about the question, how did we lose our way? How did we get so lost? And so we begin to question things that church folk don't question. For years and years and years, a lot of our lessons began with the word rethinking. We started off rethinking the Bible. But Now, again, remember, Christians are no worse than any other people. We're living with a framing story that is betraying us, but we're not intrinsically bad human beings. We're no more hostile toward women than any other people are. We're no more homophobic than any other people are. We're no more judgmental. We're no more harsh or toward outsiders than any others. But we are caught in a dilemma, and that dilemma is that for 500 years, we have framed our religion around one way of being, and that was rooted in an understanding of what the Bible is. Now, that view of what the Bible is was incredibly valuable when we lived in Newton's worldview, when everything was solid, concrete, and absolute. But that world stopped existing. We now live in Einstein's world, and we were clinging on to an old framework in a new worldview. So, by holding on to that view of the Bible, we were getting in trouble. And by holding on to that and defending that view of the Bible, we were picking up a set of instincts that had become particularly harsh. We became very outgrouping in our instincts. When we said that the Bible is the only way that you can find the ways of God, then we all went to the Bible. And as soon as we went to the Bible and we found the way, and you, in the same church as me, went to the Bible and you found a different way, I can't go to church with you anymore. So from the time we started making the Bible the only way we find the Word of God, we went from two denominations, and there were only two because the Roman Empire had to split and they had to, you know, have different places. We went from two denominations to now there are 41,000 denominations. 41,000 times we have said, I've read the Bible, I know what it says, I have found the truth, you've got a different truth, I can't go to church with you. And so we became harsh and judgmental toward one another. Well, of course, then we are harsh and judgmental to the world around us because we are bred in this environment in which harsh and judgmental is the way. So, going back into our history, we had to rediscover, rethink, how do people find their wisdom, find their source? And it turns out that there's a lot of ways. Scripture's one, but so is tradition, the accumulated wisdom of those who've gone before us. So is reason, figuring out your head, using your noggin. So is the idea of a personal experience, these spiritual experiences we have, the interior voice, the community of faith. And so we go back and we began to, as a community, figure out how do you live when the Bible isn't your only source, but it is one of many sources. So we began rethinking our story. We began rethinking God. How, in our collective minds, had we started to question, to shoehorn the uncontainable divine into a metaphor for God that was human-shaped and then said, that equals God? Because our tradition tells us again and again from the very beginning, don't do that, and we did it. And in the process of doing it, it was making us worse people. We began to rethink sin. We went back into our history and we found two influential thinkers. One of them was Augustine and one of them was Calvin. And their view of sin was actually very different than Jesus' view of sin and Paul's view of sin and the Hebrew view of sin. They kind of elevated sin and said, it's the main thing instead of just a thing. It's a thing and you got to deal with it, but it is not the main thing. And said, so how do we rethink that? We went back and we began to rethink Jesus. We realized we've been telling our story of Jesus in such a way that it made the notion of following Jesus kind of a non-starter, because how do you follow something that is qualitatively different than human? How do you follow this God, this deity? And it turns out our tradition never told us that Jesus was a deity, told us that Jesus was divine, and that you carried the same spirit within you that Jesus carried within. And so we started thinking about what Paul said about Jesus was the firstborn of a new creation, which means there is a secondborn and a thirdborn and a millionth born, and that is us carrying the same spirit within us that Jesus carried, so we could follow Jesus. So we began to rethink sin and salvation, this crazy thing we say on our website that sin is not that big a deal, and prayer and meditation and the interior divine and the oneness that is not the sameness. And we began to rethink this unbreakable connection that we have to the divine and to one another, and how we saw that our connectedness to everything calls us to tikkun olam, which is to be repairers of the world. And we began this whole process of rethinking and rethinking and rethinking and rethinking, and began to see that a different story invites us to a very different spiritual journey. And it's a healthier spiritual journey. The Christianity that we inherited from the 19th and the 20th centuries we began to realize, had been so driven by fear that it had deviated from the spiritual tradition that we were left by our founders. Because here's what happened in the 19th and 20th centuries. Darwin scared us. And modernism scared us. And science scared us. And when we got scared, we tried to find a story that was more comforting. And we did. But in the process of making our story more comforting, we actually made it smaller. And we made that smaller story, trying to become comforted, we actually set ourselves up for a narrative that doesn't work in our new world. One of the things that we discovered along the way is that, you know what, that's okay, because that happens, and it happens all the time. If you have a big enough view of history, you realize this happens at least every 500 years, maybe even more often. We lose our way. If we look back over the 6,000 years of Abrahamic religions, this is not the first time we've lost it. It won't be the last. It happens again and again. And one of the most encouraging things that we found is that a tradition is a tradition because somewhere along the way, when it loses its way, it finds it again. Because that's what makes a tradition last for thousands of years. So we say it all the time. Yes, it's our way to lose our way, but it is also our way to find our way when we've lost it. So we find our way back again and again through the centuries, back to the interior divine, back to those deepest transformative truths. We find our way again. So we did that as a community together. That happened. We rethought the story. We started finding our way again. We started accessing in our own history a better story that brings about a better spiritual journey. And then... just about the time one of the sections of the 540 opened, I was getting on to that section of the 540, and I was listening to a podcast of a genre that there are many of. You might have heard one of those, and this is the genre of podcast. It goes like this. Organized religion is bad. It's really, really bad. We need to deconstruct organized religion because it's bad. Organized religion is bad. We need to deconstruct organized religion. You might have heard one of those podcasts. Well, here's the thing. We had been deconstructing our religion, so it's not like I disagreed with this thing, but there I was sitting in the car, pulling on to this new section of the 540 and thinking to myself, that just feels old and tired now. Yeah, I got it. Bad. Deconstruct. Sure. But here's the thing. At some point, we're going to have to reconstruct. We can't just spend all of our lives deconstructing. We're going to have to start building again. And so back in those years, I can't remember if it was around 2005 maybe, I began to do a lesson. I said, okay, folks, we've got one more rethinking to do. And this is we have to rethink maybe the hardest one because we are going to rethink the thing that many of us think is actually the source of our religious pain. Are you ready? We are going to rethink organized religion. Organized religion had been for, at best, many of us, dissatisfying. At best, it was unpowerful. At best, it was untransformative. At best, it was meh. But for many, they didn't experience the best. For many, organized religion had been harmful. For many, it had been toxic. For many, it had been stunting their growth as a human being. And they were carrying the wounds of their experience of organized religion. And the idea that we would start rebuilding something that harmful, that was kind of a hard sell. But here's the thing that we've learned as a community. Organized religion is not the problem. We thought it was, but it's not the problem. The organized part of organized religion, that's not the problem. We thought it was. We were the unorganized church for a long time because we didn't know what the problem was. But that's not the problem. And it turns out religion in the organized religion part isn't even the problem we thought it was. Religion is just a set of systems. And those systems will either do something wonderful or do something harmful. It's just a set of systems. Religion is like money. You can do something wonderful with money. You can do something awful with money. It's a set of systems. So I described religion this way. Religion is a house, and spirituality lives inside that house. And so a house, you know, it can be a good thing. It has a sink. People need a sink, has a table, has a chair, has a roof. Good thing, right? unless that house gets toxic. And the house that our spirituality was designed to live in had gotten a little toxic. We had a spiritual version of radon, or rats, or black mold. Well, what you do in that is you either move out and become homeless, or you strip the thing down to the studs, you spray it with bleach, and you begin to rebuild. So we begin to explore history again. How does one rebuild religion? How do we begin to unearth the structures that have made us healthy and well and have caused us to thrive in the past? What are the things that people have done that have been systems to transform? What are the things that people have done that are systems to make us better people, better neighbors, better moms, and better siblings, and better dads, and better co-workers? What have we done in the past in our religious structures that have allowed us to access that interior divine that is our heritage so that we can be transformed? What are the ancient practices that have awakened us from the false self and have given us access to our inner divine selves? So when Jennifer redid our logo for we're going to change our name in January and become Common Thread Church, when she did the logo, you know what that is. That's the circle. We work the circle. You hear it all the time. And the circle is we take four categories of ancient spiritual practice and we break them into the quadrants. And we say there are the communal practices, there are the contemplative practices, there are the learning practices, and there are the serving practices. All ancient wisdom about how human beings are transformed by encountering the indwelling divine. And so we began to explore those practices. First thing, we had to learn what they were. And then second, we had to figure out how to do them. So we realized that one of those categories of practice, authentic community, has to start somewhere. So we started with life story groups where we can sow seeds of trust and affection. Then we realized that spiritual growth has to happen inside of spiritual community. So we began to figure out how we were going to be honest with one another to talk about our shadow sides. And turns out we hit on this idea of asking these questions. Here's 14 questions that will help you do the work of self-awareness and self-disclosure. And by the way, the Enneagram is going to be a roadmap, tell you what kind of pitfalls your false self is going to fall into. So here, let's study the Enneagram and then get into groups where we can do that as a community. And by the way, if you're going to be authentic and you're going to be in community, you're going to have conflict. And if you're going to have conflict, you better have conflict resolution skills, because otherwise we say oneness that is not sameness, but we will never be oneness if you don't learn how to do conflict resolution. And so we then develop the contemplative practices, because that's how we access the interior divine and step back from the false self and that clutching hold that it has on us. So we learn mindfulness meditation, and then we practice examinative consciousness and loving kindness meditation. And then we realize that we're going to be serving this world around us. We need to be able to not just have service aspects, but we also need to challenge the systems that were causing the problems in the first place. And so we got to do it in such a way that the whole community is involved, because that's here and now in small doable. Otherwise, any one of us will get worn out. So we have to do things we can do together that we can't do alone. And the circle, we figured out, are these ancient practices that we can do, rooted in skills that we can learn, that when we are faithful to their practice, will transform us. And after a while, we looked up and realized what we had. We had a simple base model prototype of healthy, organized religion. A house for our spirituality to live in. A spiritual bed and a sink and a chair and a roof. And it was transforming us. And the practice was changing who we are and how we live, and changing our homes and our children, and changing who we are when we show up to work. We found out we had a religion that worked. And that's where we are now. But here's the thing. We didn't just make this up out of nothing. We are the recipients of the gifts of those who have gone before us. Because when we went back into history, we went back to someone else's experience, and they gave that to us. We went back into the Eastern Orthodox tradition, and they gave us gifts. We went back into the Celtic Christian tradition, and they gave to us. We went back into the Quaker tradition. We went back into the Desert Fathers and Mothers, and we found that we are the recipients of gifts who have gone before us. And Jesus said something about that when you received a gift. If you have been given much, then you owe. where much is given than much is required. And we owe a debt because we didn't just think this healthy stuff up. We found it in our heritage. And we can't repay them, but we can pay this forward. Now, I mentioned in the last lesson that the idea of a shared sexual narrative and the institutions that support that shared narrative, they do not exist now. They might be 100 years away. And if that's true of our sexual journey, it is triply true of our spiritual journeys. And so what we do in this generation where we don't have a shared narrative and we don't have shared institutions is we lay the groundwork for them so that they will know a roadmap of where to go. We rebuild what is broken and we excavate the broken parts. We dig into our instincts and we find out our bad instincts about women or divorce or about gay people or about hypocrisy or about our heavy-handedness. And we sketch out what it would be like to experience together this life and vitality that happens when we organize ourselves in a way that we are becoming and belonging. And then by doing that, we leave behind a set of blueprints that says, here is how a religion can support people, and here is how a religion can change people, and here is how a religion can transform our world in us and then through us. And so when I stand up here every week and I suggest that this is a good place to invest your love and your time and your energy and your dollars, that's the historical context in which I am suggesting it. We human beings, we are not stopping being spiritual simply because we don't go to church anymore. Spirituality is deeply wired inside of us. But we will either work out a narrative that will work in this new framework, we will either build prototype institutions that will support our spirituality, or we will wait another generation before we find our way again. That's what we're working on together. When you are working the circle, when you are helping hammer out how the circle works, you are really finding a way to leave behind a religion that works. That's what we're doing together. When you attend a worksheet workshop and you learn how to do the workshop and then you become the listener so you can invite others into doing the workshop and you can begin to work on your own self-awareness and then invite others into that so that they also can get beyond the shadow self and find the interior divine within. When you are becoming an Enneagram person who understands how your false self works so that you can help others become Enneagram people who understand how their false self works, and together we can avoid the pitfalls and support one another in a religion that works. When you are meditating and when you are detaching from your false self and when you are inviting others to support one another in the same, we are working the circle. And here's the thing, there is great benefit to you when you do that. It's good for you. Your life will be better. Your home will be better. Good for you. It's good for you. But what I want you to hear today is it's about more than you and me. It's about hammering out together a spiritual narrative that works, an organized way for people to access the interior divine, because if we do that, then we become better people, but ours becomes a better world. You hear me say from time to time that a religion isn't about the benefits that accrue to the members. A religion is measured by the benefits that accrue to the world, to those who are not adherents. Well, that's what we're working on. We're working on becoming elders. We are planting trees in the shade of which we will never sit. I'm not going to be here forever. You're not going to be here forever. What legacy will we leave to our children and to our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren? We have the potential to leave the legacy of a religion that will change them, a religion that will transform who they are and allow them to be transformative agents in their world. That's what we're doing together. And I hope you're all in, because it's not something that a leader can do. It's something that only happens when we all make it happen. Now, next week, I want to build on that big picture thoughts, and I want to talk about implementation. How would we get from here to there? What are the things that we will need to do together? Because as I said a moment ago, I'm not going to be here forever. You're not going to be here forever. Transformative ideas won't survive. Prototype structures that we are hammering out together won't survive if we don't give away what we have here. So we'll have to think together about what that means. Decide together about what that means. So I hope you'll come next, because here's the thing. At some point, you benefit from, and you benefit from, and you benefit from, and you benefit from, and there is a law of diminishing returns. You will stop benefiting from if you don't then start giving away. If something doesn't switch inside of you that you take in and then give out, you begin to have an elimination problem. And anybody who's ever had an elimination problem knows that doesn't work well. There is something that has to come in, and then it is deepened in us. It becomes transformative when we give it away. And here's the thing. We don't have institutions that structure for that. We don't know how to make that happen in a nice, easy pathway. And so there are things that we have to decide together about how we get from here to there. And so next week, we'll talk about the decisions we need to make. But I want to do it on the basis of this big picture understanding of where we are, what we've done, and what we have. So indwelling spirit, may it be so that we leave a legacy to the generations that allows for better people to live in a better world. Amen.
If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, northraleighcommunitychurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page on your computer's browser, at the bottom on your phone's browser. Thank you.